stopped at the fourth tourney. As I showed you on a chart, it only took 3 years to recover from, you know, the near-death experience to get to new highs. So if you're a central banker, you would suggest that it worked. They can declare victory. The question, I think, is bigger than that, and I think that's what you're pointing to. What are they doing now in a crisis sort of modality 8.5 years after the crisis? And we refer all week from Ray Dalio and people much more organized than I am that have better, you know, ideas in that department than I do. But what I think about is the consequences, and the consequences of this behavior. And Rick just pointed out what we're witnessing in Europe for the next 12 months. There's going to be an election cycle. You're going to see lots of risk. And what you're seeing are the central banks continuing to do multiple very aggressive intervening to protect against the liquidity event. So my view is that central banks are going to become the politicians of the next couple of years. They're going to be, they're not going to be held up in high esteem as saviors of the system. And I think that's the real risk. I mean, as I said at the beginning, it's not, the problem isn't that they do these things. The problem is that all of us in this room accept it. And at some point, all of you are going to be asking that question. And when we all start asking that question, just as quickly as the stock market on election night in America went from being there, the S&P was down 5%. And then 2 hours after the election became clear, the results, it was down 5%, and then 2 hours later, it turned up. And it hasn't looked back. And that's how fast this can change. So the question is, when we start to question money and central bank behavior, like we do politicians and we want to throw the bums out, and we don't care who we elect, this is going to be a change, that becomes a different phenomenon. I think the trigger is a problem, right? A problem really accelerates that question. It makes it real. So I think you ask an important question if there aren't good answers for it.
Can I just ask one little thing on top of that? Let me get this right. A central bank loans the government, say, $1 million, and they print this out. And then they say that you need to pay us back with interest. Well, where's that interest come from? Do they have to loan it back again? Is this a self-perpetuating?
What a central bank does, I mean, Japan is the best example. They've been in QE, quantitative easing, since 1992. That's when they started. And they have no way out. They can't come out. Every time they come out, the market shakes, the bond prices start to shake, and then they have to put more in. So what they do is they create money that didn't exist, and then they use the money to buy assets to keep sort of normal pricing and normal liquidity in the system. So you see them buying bonds, you see them buying stuff. The Bank of Japan buys ETFs. They are 90% of the volume in the Japanese bond ETF market. It's really kind of weird. And at some point, these questions you pose become, you know, in our forebrains. And I think that's the moment you want to have left tail positions on, and you want to have lots of, you know, liquidity, like Rick talked about. Because think about this. If cash doesn't guarantee optionality, because in the UK, and I apologize, I keep picking on the UK, it's good food, if you think about the UK, if you held cash in 1900, or let's say in World War II, and you decided to convert your sterling to dollars and invest in sort of the American economy, you had to pay 100% premium in terms of the exchange rate, because what the government imposed, they didn't want the money to be converted out. So the market was X, the market price for the conversion, but because you held money in the system in local currency, you had 100% premium even though you were in the safest asset they had. And I think if you think about the bigger questions that have come up this week, we live in a world of conflict and tension are clearly on the rise. And if we think that capital controls can only happen in China or in Greece or in these, you know, crazy little areas, we're headed right into a fourth turn, right? It's not the end of the world. It's a different mindset. It's a different tactical process. You with me? So multiple currencies, I still argue, it makes sense. It is difficult, it's complicated, less than fun, but I think your point's well taken. I mean, we don't know how this central bank thing ends.
Thank you.
Yeah. How about right here?
Two more questions. Yeah, we could come up with that, but what I would do is pretend you know nothing. And you don't have to pretend, if you're reading, you don't know anything in terms of how these are going to move. So if you don't know, you have to own your version of what I just showed you before, or get lucky and pick the right one or two. I mean, look, if the dollar continues, I think that Trump wants to have a weaker currency. He's a mercantilist, and he wants trade. I think he's going to fight like hell to have a weaker dollar. You see the commodity cycle that looks like turn up in mid-February. How sustainable is that? I don't know, but it's pretty impressive. But what makes it so weird is the dollar is rising while these mining shares are rising. It's a very confusing time for managers or for anybody that's looking after their own money. So the answer is, I don't know. I mean, I have a view, but there's a view can change when I get up here if the facts change. So I think if you live in America, or where do you live?
I live in Spain, but it's...
Get the money out of the Spanish banks. Because not that it has to end badly, but it's too easy to do it right. Get into Germany or somewhere. It's likely to still stay there. I mean, something diversified. I don't mean that bad in what I just said, but I do think that there's a lot of risk there. And I think you just diversify the currencies and just wait. Like Rick said, there's going to be huge opportunities. You just have to be patient. One more, come over here.
One more.
Across that way, let me avoid that from a, my view is that this is not a bullish moment. I think there's so much risk that we can't see. I think for me, I want to concentrate the money in the most talented hands that I have because I just don't know.
So I see a 2% tail risk. Is that normally aggressive, or are you getting more tail risk?
It's lower. It's very low intentionally until we get some sort of trigger where we can spend the money and know that we're right now, I'm just going to go on another year or two. As Rick said, the last thing you want to do is go up to your clients and say, everything worked well, but the tail risk is still killing us. I've had that conversation a lot. I want to get to see the
opposite.
I think the risk is higher today than it was the last few years, but that doesn't mean that you don't put the risk on and the tail risk. You follow what I'm saying? You just have enough disaster protection so that you can comfortably just ride the rally. So you can maintain aggressive position, and let the rally go if you have some positions on it.
Is there tail risk in these ones on the other side? Because these are hedge fund managers, and they have their own tail.
Well, that's what's beautiful about these guys is they do their own tail risks. That's why we spend very little money. They have teams that worry about custodians, that worry about counterparties, that worry about currency exposure. So they do have tail positions on it. Not all of them, but the global macro guy does. And I'll give you one idea that nobody's talked about. This guy here, Paul Singer, has a full team in Italy looking at Italian banks because what does the Italian banks have to do to survive? They have to sell assets, NPLs, non-performing loans. You can get some of the best Italian properties that are not performing right now for nothing, or for very little, because these banks have to blow them off their balance sheets to have their capital, right? Tier 1 capital, right? So there's a massive opportunity if you have the right skill set around. So if you're interested in any of this, reach out to me. My daughter's here in the back, too, over here in Lindsay. Just reach out to us, so we can have a higher level discussion to sort of help your team think this through. It's not that you need to work with us, but we're happy to help you think through your own tactical process. Well, thank you guys.
Thank you, Michael.